Listen to Writers on Writing every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on 88.9 FM, KUCI, in Irvine.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit kuci.org or kucitalk.org.
And hello and welcome again to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. In Irvine, we're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus. We're on the web at kuci.org, and we broadcast via iTunes. If you go to iTunes, radio, go down to public, and open that up, and you will see a list of radio stations. KUCI FM is there. You can listen immediately. We also podcast the show, and I'll talk more about that later. But I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett still. Marie Stone, my co-host, and I sort of split the shows, so I'm here a few times a month. She's here, too, and hopefully you're enjoying it. The show, as always, features authors, editors, poets, and literary agents discussing the art and the business of writing, and a really nice accolade the show got. If you're in Orange County, or even if you're not, in Orange Coast Magazine, in the current issue, the July issue, which is a complete redesign of the magazine under the direction of Marty Smith, who used to be editor years ago, went to the LA Times Sunday Magazine, was senior editor there, is back at Orange Coast Magazine. There's the July issue, the best of Orange County, and Writers on Writing is named one of the best 100 in terms of, I think it's under the media category. There's a few in the media category, and we're literary magnet number one. So you can find it online. You can find it on the newsstands, July 2008. In any case, I'm here today with Robert Crace and Nancy Peacock. First up is Robert Crace. He's the author of 12 novels. He was on, I think it was last year or so, maybe a little longer, with his last novel, The Watchman. He is a former TV writer. He's the 2006 recipient of the Ross MacDonald Literary Award. And I'm just so happy to talk with him again. I'm definitely a fan. Let's bring him on. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Barbara. Thanks for having me.
Oh, sure. Great to have you here. Actually, I have you on the line and talking about Chasing Darkness, your newest novel. And it was interesting after reading The Watchmen, your last book, which was a Joe Pike novel. And this one is Elvis Cole, which I was so looking forward to after meeting Elvis in your last book. Will you talk about the seeds for this book and how it came about?
Well, Chasing Darkness is... my way of thinking, it's about the random way in which evil, you know, darkness can drop into our lives without expectation, and then what it can do to people who are the surviving victims of that. I keep a clipped file, always have, you know, interesting articles, news reports, things I download from the internet, print. And when I decided I wanted to write a novel in which my main character, Elvis Cole, in which his life is sort of upended in this way, a couple of cases, I think, were the inspiration. They certainly have stayed with me for a long time. And one is a fairly well-known case in the early 80s, which was called the Wonderland Murders. I mean, there have even been movies about that. It was in the early 80s. Four people were murdered in a private residential home in Laurel Canyon, up near the top of Lookout Mountain. And this case received some notoriety because the porn star John Holmes, Johnny Wadd, was arrested and tried and acquitted in the crimes, but it wasn't the lurid nature made the this particular story stay with me. It was the neighborhood. The fact that this particular neighborhood was you know, middle class, upper middle class, your typical canyon neighborhood. These were just normal people going about their everyday lives. There was an elementary school a block away. And none of the people in that neighborhood, on the morning when they woke up, none of them had any reason to expect, suspect, or believe that in the house down the street, four people had been hacked to death. That, the notion of that, that, you know, that kind of nightmare could enter any of our lives at any time with such a degree of unexpectedness is something that stayed with me and fascinates me. And that's what I wanted to visit upon my main character, Elvis Cole. And that really, I think, was the genesis for Chasing Darkness.
The book also seems to be about, well, about trust, and in the end, you know, who we think we trust is not necessarily the trustworthy one, and who we don't trust may be. I don't know if that was part of what you were thinking when you...
Very much so. I mean, every time I write any book, you know, I write a series. There have been 12 Elvis Cole novels, as you pointed out. But I'm not, I mean, I'm interested in the art and the craft of writing, so I don't want each of the books to be identical. I try to set different tasks for myself with each new book. And in Chasing Darkness, tasks was to try to write a story which everything that we see, everyone we meet, the things we learn through the story, ultimately are turned on their ear. That nothing is as it seems. That there's deception and illusion everywhere. Because I think that's how it is in our in our lives. I mean, that's what we try to. That's the chaos and the confusion in our lives that we're trying to find our way through, divining the truth and what's really presented to us.
Yeah. You're listening to Writers on Writing. I'm with Robert Crace, whose new book is Chasing Darkness. I was also curious about Elvis, because in the Joe Pike novel, where he played a role, but perhaps not as big a role as Joe Pike, and now in this one, where it's his story, he's in the forefront. His love life is in turmoil, and I find that appealing about him. I find it that, you know, Lucy is away, and the a woman detective that we might want him to get together with, he never does, and at least not yet. And is that part of what you feel makes Elvis appealing? And do you like to keep that going? Because I notice in suspense novels a lot where, I mean, I tend to be attracted to the novels where the main character's love life is in disarray, and they never quite get it together.
When I began the series, of course I had no idea what was to come. I mean, heck, when I wrote the first Elvis Cole novel, The Monkey's Raincoat, I was just trying to write a book that made sense. I had no idea that it would become what it has become. But the characters, Elvis and Joe, in many ways have become real to me. I mean, not to say that I need medication, but they've been, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years, and those characters have been with me every day for 20 years, and the landscape that has grown for them that have created in the books and the characters that populate that landscape have developed a history, and I have to respect what that history is. And you know, Elvis is a single guy, and he has an interest in in women, and he meets interesting women. And so relationships have developed, but as they do in real life, you know, they go through changes, and I find, maybe it's just me as a writer, but I find that when I create a character who I find interesting and maybe I fall in love with a little bit, I don't want to let her go. So she ends up staying around in Elvis's life, and they have their ups and downs, and that's really what's happened in with Elvis's relationships. You know, he met a woman that he fell in love with, Lucy Chenier, who was an attorney from Louisiana, and they had their upswing, and things were great, and then things kind of hit a rocky element because. You know, Elvis seems to be a magnet for trouble, and Lucy has a young son, and she began to have second thoughts about this relationship. Did she really want this kind of trouble in her life and around her child? So now they're kind of on the skids, and she went back to Louisiana, and then there is an ex LAPD bomb technician named Carol Starkey, who's currently a homicide detective on LAPD. And she clearly is smitten with Elvis. I mean, she, listen, she's a pretty hot chick too. But Elvis still has serious feelings for Lucy Chenier, so he's caught in that bind. And part of their ongoing nature with that is I think me trying to sort my way through too, and feel my way through what's best for these characters that I care about.
Hmm. This might be a great time for you to read to us, would you? Read
sure.
From Chasing Darkness, if you just tuned in.
Sure.
Robert
I picked a little piece here, and the nature of the conversation has led us to it perfectly, because it's really about, it features Elvis Cole and Carol Starkey. And I guess I should do a little setup.
Okay.
In Chasing Darkness, the basic premise is this. Several years ago, Elvis was hired by a defense attorney to work on behalf of a man who was being tried for a homicide, the murder of a young woman. And Elvis found evidence that caused the charges against that man to be dropped. Elvis proved the guy could not have done it. And now, as the book opens, as Chasing Darkness opens, that same man is found dead of a suicide in a house in Laurel Canyon. But horribly with him is evidence that he, in fact, not only murdered that girl, but six others. And that's what turns Elvis's life on its head, because, you know, Elvis is a man of conscience. He's a guy who tries to do the right thing, and now suddenly he has to deal with this issue. Was he, in fact, responsible in some way for freeing a murderer who then went on to murder other women? And when he tries to get to the bottom of this, to the truth of it, he finds himself stonewalled by the LAPD investigation. And so he turns to his friend Carol Starkey, who herself is a homicide detective, for help. And she's arranged for him to learn some things and see some things. So at the end of the first day, he's now returning home, and it's been a pretty bad day for him.
Okay.
The sun was lowering as I traced the winding streets off Mulholland Drive toward home. I live in a house held fast to the steep slopes overlooking Los Angeles. It's a small house on the lip of a canyon I share with coyotes and hawks, skunks and black-tailed deer, and possums and rattlesnakes. More rural than not, coming home has always felt like leaving the city, even though some things cannot be left behind. My house did not come with a yard the way flatland houses have yards. It came with a deck that hangs over the canyon and a nameless cat who bites. I like the deck and the cat a lot, and the way the lowering sun will paint the ridges and ravines in a palette of purple and brass. The termites I can do without. When I rounded the final curve toward home, Carol Starkey's Taurus was at my front door, but Starkey wasn't behind the wheel. I let myself in through the kitchen, then on into the living room where sliding glass doors open onto my deck. Starkey was outside, smoking, the hot wind pushing her hair. She raised her hand when she saw me. Starkey never just dropped around. I opened the sliders and stepped out. "What are you doing here?" "You say that like I'm stalking you." I wanted to see how it went with Lindo. She snapped her cigarette over the rail. The wind caught it and carried it out to the canyon. "We're in the hills, Starkey. This is a tinderbox up here." I studied the slope long enough to make sure we weren't going to be engulfed by an inferno. She was watching me when I looked up. "What?" "So how did it go?" The leading theory seems to be I misread the time frame when Bennett was murdered. These guys are in such a hurry to close the case, they're not even waiting for all the forensics to come back. We lapsed into silence for a moment. I met Carol Starkey when a boy named Ben Chenier was missing. Starkey helped me find him, and the friendship we developed during the search grew. A few months later, a man named Frederick Reinecke shot me, and Starkey visited me regularly at the hospital. We had been building a history, and the friendship that grew with it made me smile. "I ever thank you for coming to the hospital all those times?" She flushed. "I was just trying to score with your pal, Pike." "Well, thanks anyway." Starkey touched the side of my chest where Reinecke put me down with the 12-gauge shotgun. Number 4 buckshot and 2 surgeries later. She said, "You think you have scars, mister? You ought to see my scars, Cole. I got you beat all to hell." Carol Starkey had been a bomb technician. A bomb had blown her apart in a trailer park, and then she had been brought back to life. She dropped my hand. She said, "Don't watch the news, man. Just forget it." "Sure. You're not going to forget it, are you?" "No. Maybe that's why I love you." That's Elvis and Carol.
Thank you so much. It's interesting to hear you read it after having read the book, you know, to hear sort of your intonations and
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. I like them quite a bit. I think maybe that's one of the reasons that I've kept them apart in a way. The tension between them is something that I enjoy. I find it very, very rich, and it gives me great writing ground to cover and explore.
Yes. Well, I wanted to ask you in terms of structure, because we always get into sort of structure and writing on the show, and you, during the course of the book, I found myself changing my idea about who did what, and so I started thinking about how you might have structured the book and how much you knew before you began, and did you have the ending, and did you then have to work toward it, or because there is one huge MacGuffin in this book, and how does it go for you? I mean, how much do you need to know, and how much do you not want to know when you started this book? Let's talk about this one.
Well, this one, you know, it's course of all the books I've written, the method actually has changed a little bit. It's evolving for me. In the beginning of my career, I needed to know a lot. It always felt more comfortable for me to thoroughly outline the books. For this book, the book itself changed radically as I wrote it. And what I mean by that is It started off as a much larger book. You know, the past few books, The Watchman, Forgotten Man, Last Detective, whatever, ever since L.A. Requiem, the past few books have been fairly large books that I structured to have multiple parallel storylines, multi-character viewpoints, things like that. And this book started that way. That was my intention. But the story, I mean, this situation for Cole, where he's sitting there just another day, any other day, and two police officers come in and they say, here's what we found, and we just want to let you know, buddy, you might have been responsible for setting free a killer and getting a couple of women killed. The more I lived with Elvis Cole, and the more I thought about what he must be feeling, the expanded version of the book seemed almost to get in the way of what I had to deal with. I wanted to pare it down. I wanted to make it a much more intense, focused only on Elvis type of story. And all that other stuff I started to drop. And as I began to try to plot it, I just found myself writing it. And that was, in a way, kind of frightening for me because, I like to know what's going to... Before I write it, I want to know, like, two scenes, three scenes ahead, exactly what's going to happen. Here's why it's going to work, Bob. You don't have to be scared of it. But this time, I think there were a lot of elements to this that kept surprising me. And since I had set the task for myself of wanting to write this story for Elvis, to put him in a world where absolutely nothing and no one was what it appeared to be, maybe I kind of needed to be in that head state to make it as spontaneous as it possibly could be. I actually found that, Barbara, I'll tell you, through most of the writing of this particular book, I was much more fearful than I usually am, because I'm not a guy who's comfortable with the unknown. But I think maybe that, in retrospect now, that probably helped what I was trying to do.
Mm. Yeah, because there were so many surprises along the way, which I loved about it, that I could not predict what was to happen.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah,
kept me reading. We have a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to ask you about place and how place plays in your work and in this novel, because earlier you mentioned landscape and how the Wonderland murders had sort of inspired you in a way. And in this book, Los Angeles, from Laurel Canyon to Reseda and all over the place, is very much described, and for anyone who's not been here, you're here in this book. How important is place, how important is place in your work?
Well, for me, it's enormously important. Place is character. When place, the human character, event, all go hand in hand. They reinforce each other. I mean, all the way from, Elvis Cole as Elvis Cole the man, the protagonist, is very much a part of his house in the Hollywood Hills. He's got this. He himself, you read the books, he's this kind of laid back guy with loud Hawaiian shirts and Nikes. He's a sort of a mellow guy, unless he has to be something else. And he lives in a funky little A-frame with his cat, and it all just kind of goes together into a gestalt that I think that it's perfectly fitting to his character. When Joe Pike, his partner lives in a pretty austere condo in Culver City that's extremely private. That all fits together.
Mm-hmm.
So when I am, for example, in the prologue, when I'm showing Elvis's former client Lionel Byrd being found up Lookout Mountain, you know, again, that place and where he lives all seems to help define the characters for me. So I try to do that with locations around the city. And in fact, oftentimes when I'm writing, I go out early in the morning because that's when the traffic is best, and I like to explore the city. I'm always on the lookout for actual places that will help me define or identify some emotion that I'm trying to convey in the work.
Well, it's working. It's working. I'm sorry to say we're at the end of our time. Any last words for perhaps the suspense writers out there who are working their way through a project?
I think that what you know, this is what you trust yourself. When I do speak at writers' conferences and talk to writers who are trying to plow their way through their first book or two, I think they, one of the things I hear is they often get too caught up in the dicta utter you know they find in magazines and books and from other writers. You know, there's no one correct way to write a book. You know, we're all different, and they have to trust themselves and find their own way to write what it is they need to write. And part of that trusting themselves is trusting their own taste. You know, write what you love, because there's no really more pure way to spend your time.
Yeah. I thank you for coming on the show again.
Barbara, thank you. It was really a lot of fun. It went way too fast. It
went way too fast. Next time, next book, an hour, okay?
Okay, you got it.
That was Robert Crace talking to us from Los Angeles. He has a website, which is robertcrace.com, and he's doing a lot of events in the area with this book and sort of ongoing. He was at the Los Angeles Times Festival of Books on stage with Jeff Parker, and it was a wonderful hour to spend there listening to them. In any case, check out his website, go out to a signing. Signings are great, and if you're struggling through work and you need to make contact with other writers, and there's so much going on in Los Angeles and Orange County and all over anymore. One way to find out is a site called booktours.com, and it's a free site. You can sign up and get your zip code in there. When authors come to your area, you are notified via email. Check it out. I'm going to leave you with a quote by Angus Wilson, who said, "All fiction is for me a kind of magic and trickery, a confidence trick, trying to make people believe something is true that isn't." Thanks for listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM in Irvine. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. My book is Pen on Fire. I will see you next time.